Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city, and this is the Electric Drum. Today, I am speaking with Mr. Gary Moore, coach of track at Hill House High School here in the city of New Haven. Thank you. Hello, Mr. Academic.
How you doing, sir?
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
West Haven. Pretty much all my life, West Haven Middle School, High School. Mom and Dad, pretty much middle, I would say middle class neighborhood. Trying to think what else about me.
How was your mom like and your dad and your upbringing?
Very, very supportive. My father's from the West Indies, from Jamaica. And so, pretty, I would say, strict for the most part, upbringing. But I definitely came from a good situation as far as, you know, the examples that my my mom and my father were for me.
Okay, you said your father was a disciplinarian, so to speak?
Jamaican, yeah, disciplinarian, you know.
Any good stories or what kind of values he instilled in you?
Working hard. That's probably the biggest thing that anything you want, you have to work for it. And nobody's going to give you anything. I'd say that's, and it wasn't just talking. It was seeing him going to work and come home and having the house and still having to do things around the house. So he definitely was, or he definitely is, if he's still here, was a great example to me of what it was to be, you know, have a father and a man, you know, and I figured that's the biggest thing I learned from him, that you have to work. And waking up early, taking care of things you need to take care of, and then you enjoy the rest of your day. But everything was always about getting up early and taking care of things that needed to be done in the house, around the house, or, you know, just for the family. So I that was definitely the biggest thing that my father taught me, and I'm that way now, you know. So, but definitely I would say that. But definitely a disciplinarian, too. You know, didn't play. So I'm kind of like that, too, to some degree. I try to tone it down a little bit, you know, because I think as we get older, you also kind of say, okay, certain things you understood and certain things, you know, you have to kind of taper it, you know, as, you know, you become a father figure or a father. So, yeah, definitely.
And your mother, what kind of values she gave to you?
Education, you know, so you're talking about my father who I don't even know, maybe fifth grade, I don't even know. Coming right from Jamaica, and then my mom was a teacher. So, I had that. I thought it was a really nice dynamic with the two of them. But my father valued education also. So I always remember the two of them spending a lot of time together and just very big on trivia and so. Because they were big on trivia, I became big on that stuff, knowing your states and knowing geography and knowing about the world that we live in. And that was very big for them with each other because he was able to teach my mom a lot of things and my mom was able to teach him a lot of things. And together, they were always like that, always looking to learn. And so that's what I grew up around, that environment. So I know with my wife, she's always like, how do you know this? How do you know? Hey, when I was little, my parents had me sitting down and I had to know certain things, you know, and it was drilled into me at a young age. And so, you know, definitely something else, you know, that I picked up was just that whole love of, you know, learning and just education is important.
Sounds like there was a certain level of healthy competitiveness in the family early on.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you could say. I never really looked at it like that as a kid. But yeah, now that you kind of said it that way. But yeah, definitely very competitive. And I know a lot of that was instilled in me about being competitive. Because I'm like that to this day. So.
You went to school in West Haven as a young man.
Yeah.
Were you affected by race in that day and age?
It's interesting. No, actually, no. I didn't have any. I don't ever recall having any issues. Well, yes. it reared its ugly head maybe once or twice, but it wasn't something that was this ongoing thing. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I had friends, white friends, black friends, and it never seemed to be an issue. Growing up in West Haven, at least where I lived at in that neighborhood.
What neighborhood did you live in? Allentown?
No, I wasn't in Allentown. I was up by Glade Street. So you know Glade Street. I'm on Terrace Avenue and Glade Street's right around the corner. So no, it's not Allentown. So definitely a little different dynamic, you know, even within West Haven where you live, because it was all black people, Terrace Avenue around the corner, to Homeside Avenue. It was basically all mostly black people in that whole area, you know, and then or more on the Terrace Avenue side where you had more of the, you know, white people lived on that side mixed in with black people. So it was definitely a diverse neighborhood.
Oh, okay. So it's very inclusive. How did you first get involved in track? Were you involved in track as a student?
Yes, I was involved in high school. I went to West Haven, football was always the thing. So, you know, I played football. I played Pop Warner. Well, I don't know if they call it Pop Warner back then, but it was, you know, the youth football. And so from there, going to high school, you know, you play football and, oh, you know, I'm fast. So, hey, you did track. So you're fast. You did, as a football player, you did track. You did both of those things. And so then that's how I got involved in track and field. Just going to high school and just being fast at that age and could jump. And so it was just a natural thing, natural fit. And so that's what we did back then.
Who was your coach for your first coach in track and how influential was those people early on?
Elliot Marnell and Richard Bradbury were my coaches back then. And they were great people. Learned a lot from them. You know, just about coaching and dealing with your athletes. They were influential because that was my first introduction, and they were good to us. You know, so I didn't have any bad experiences with dealing with them. It was good.
How was dealing with practice early on as you're developing? Because, I mean, track is all about discipline and practice and running.
It didn't affect me at all because I'm coming from a discipline situation in my household. So it was never, you know, it was never a thought that crossed my mind. This is what you're asking us to do. This is what we do. So no matter what it was, okay, this is it. And so I never dealt with, oh man, oh, I want to quit doing this. It was just more like, all right, it's my coach, and I love the sport. This is what we do. And if these are the things that I have to do within the sport, then okay, this is what we do. You know, now was it challenging? Absolutely. You know, there were those days where you're like, oh my goodness, you know, but nevertheless, I just always looked at it as this is just a part of what you do within the sport. So I wasn't really fazed
running. It takes a certain mindset because it is kind of boring. How do you kept yourself entertained running all those drills? And what goes on in your mind at that early age? Because it develops over time.
That's an interesting question because, you know what? Understand something back then, entertainment. We didn't really have a whole lot of entertainment. I mean, I think Atari just, I mean, you know, maybe I come out with the block with the, you know, with those games. Tecmo Bowl was, you know, so we didn't really have a lot of distraction or we're looking for entertainment back then. I think what just kind of kept kept me going was just the competitive nature of the guys that were on my team and being competitive that, you know, we got 10 100s to do with a minute rest. And it's like, it's about staying with that group of guys. It's about, all right, as you're running, I'm competing with you. You're my boy, but I don't want you finishing in front of me. You know, and so that whole competitive mindset for me was what it was all about. And because, you know, at the end of the day, when practice is over, you know, cats start talking slick, you know, hey, you know, what happened on those last five? You know, your pride could get a little hurt. And so one of the things you want to avoid is that whole going home thing, you catching the bus or walking home and people start talking slick, especially if, they think they're better than you and you know they're not better than you. And so that whole thing kind of just kept me going. And so never was that type of situation. Plus, I didn't do the mile or the 2 mile. And it's that going around and around and around. You know, I'm running, you know, the 400, 300 hurdles, you know, and doing things like that. So they're under a minute races. So, you know, for first practice, it wasn't even a thought for me.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here with Hill House coach for track and field. Let's be specific, Mr. Gary Moore. Very successful year this year. We were talking about a little bit about his resume and how he grew up through the athletics. And did you go to college now and continue?
Yep. So my first year, I went to Virginia State University, and
that's a culture shock.
Yeah, that was different. I'd never been around so many black people in all my life, but it was awesome, though. It was awesome. I think what really, just thinking back on that, what made it really great was I had a very good advisor down there. I couldn't say his name now, but the gentleman who was our advisor was really good, and he sat us down and talked about, I know you guys aren't from here, so I'm here for you if you need me. But it was such a competitive environment, and that's what I really, you know, because I'm competitive, but it was so competitive within the major, that was architectural design, and that kind of drove me to want to do well academically, because I'm around all my people and it's like, you know, we're all striving for the same thing. And I did very well down there. I loved it. Great experience. Great experience. But then, you know, with college, it comes with dollars and cents. And at that time, you know, I wasn't getting any scholarship money because through eligibility, I wasn't eligible to actually compete. So, you know, my parents foot the bill. But while I was down there, you know, I had friends that were up here at Central, and they were like, oh, you know, coach is asking about you and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm thinking, well, hold on. My parents are spending this type of money for me to go to school down here. I mean, I could be at home and probably not have to spend any money or very little for me to come back home and go to school up at Central. And so I ended up getting a track scholarship split with a football scholarship up at Central. And I ended up, you know, coming back up here and playing football and doing track up here for Central Connecticut.
Before we continue, I think that we should mention that especially for a lot of students that are listening to this right now and people mm-hmm. that have minors that, you know, struggled that first year of coming home. Coming home is not a failure.
No, it's definitely not a failure. And I never even looked at it that way because it's funny. I a lot of it had to do with the amount of money my parents are spending there. Because, you know, back then, especially out of state, you know, if you're in state, you were good. But you're coming from Connecticut down to Virginia, you know, and that bill is what that bill is. I'm like, it just didn't make sense to me when I know I could do the same thing and be closer to home and be, well, not so much about being closer to home, but just being in Connecticut and knowing that I knew that I would get scholarship and be here and, you know, do what I needed to do. So, but definitely, you know, everything that first year was just about not being eligible coming out of high school and not really having the knowledge or the support around me to kind of guide me, you know, in a direction of knowing what I needed to do in high school to be eligible to compete at the collegiate level. So
you come here, you get your scholarship, you're at Central.
Yep.
Do you start to thrive now with a good balance of athletics and education?
I did. I was doing pretty well. But then I think I just got caught up with working. I got an internship, maybe my second year here, and I was working for the Department of Transportation, you know, and I was getting paid, you know, like, you know, people that were working there to some degree. So this is, you're in college and you're making like $2,000 a week. Like, yo, that's quite a bit of money. And so I ended up just doing that and then just started working and making money. And then what ends up happening when you start having these little side jobs and you're in college, you know, you're not putting the attention into the grades that you probably should be putting in because you're thinking more about making money. You know, you're not putting the time or energy that you need to be putting into the sport. And so before you know it, next thing you know, you're not in school. And now next thing you know, you're working, you know? And that's basically what ended up happening with me. And so I remember coming home on one of those breaks I was on and just going back to the high school because there was a track meet, Hill House and West Haven were in the track meet. And I think that was a pivotal moment that set me up for now where I am now that, you know, was helping out at the school, working with kids. And just that day, it was just like, wow, I was just talking to the guys and the kids and kids were improving within 10 minutes of me talking to them about what they needed to work on. And then, you know, my old coach said, hey, there's an opening over at Hill House. The coach over there is Bob Davis. You know, if you're hanging around and you want to, you know, get involved in the sport a little bit more, you know, talk to him and see what he's got going on with that assistant coaching position. So I ended up talking to him and I would go by the school and help volunteer for a little bit. And then next thing you know, I ended up getting that position. And then within 2 years of being at Hill House, I ended up becoming the head coach of the indoor girls and boys team and the outdoor girls team. And, you know, that sets me up.
Yeah. How did you know that you had it and had what it takes to engage the youth?
Seeing them improve and getting better. I think that was the thing for me that you gotta be able to communicate. And I felt like I was effective at communicating and getting the kids to understand what I was asking them to do. But then I'm a young guy at that time, so I was able to show them. You know, I was able to, you know, high jump. I was long jumping. I was going on runs with them. So when it was a matter of going on a run to Southern and back, I'm right there with you or in front of you, you know? And so back then, I was able to do a lot of the demonstrating for the kids. And I think kids really respected that as a coach that, wow, he's not just talking about it. He's actually out here with us, which I think made a difference at that time in my coaching career. But as kids start to improve, I think that kind of tells you, wow, I might actually be halfway decent at this thing. Mm. You know, and you know, like I said, we're here now. We're here now. So.
So in 2 years you become a coach of the, you know, the indoor, outdoor, mm-hmm. and the outdoor girls. What changes for you? What were some of the things you did early on that has changed over time now?
What are some of the things I did early on? I've had to adjust with today's kid and their situations personally. What's going on? I just think we're living in definitely a different time. I definitely feel that even from a parenting standpoint, things were so much different 30 years ago than they are now. Vastly different. Back then, I felt like parents were a little bit more involved Whereas I feel like it's kind of a little more spotty. Parents being involved with, even just simply, you know, me and my wife talk about it sometimes that we go 4 years and never meeting a parent. Never knowing who your parent is. And for us, it's sometimes, you know, we're scratching our heads. It's like, we spend so much time with these kids and you never take the time to come and meet us. And we encourage parents to come meet us because we think that's important that you know who's with your kids. And so I think over time, I think back then it was kind of like that where parents were a little bit more involved. And now it's kind of, we're kind of moving away from that more and more. And, you know, so now as coaches now, we have to kind of step up and be a little bit more, I think, now than just coaches, you know, especially with the things that kids have going on now and definitely with cell phones. I mean, that's a whole nother deal of craziness that now that these kids, you know, they're capturing these kids' minds more now than obviously than ever. And that distraction of that, you know, and, but I definitely say that's definitely changed and us having to adjust with those changes, being a little more lenient with kids and understanding their situations, but still having a standard for the program. We're going to work with you, but we still have certain standards that we are expecting you to adhere to, you know, and if it has to come down to you not being able to meet that, you know, sometimes that means you can't be a part of this because I believe that we all have things that we're dealing with in life. And I believe it's all a decision on how we approach those things that we're dealing with. And we have those conversations with the kids. I talk to kids about the things that have occurred in my life that have set me off in a different direction and things that I had to deal with. And I'm still here every day. I still show up. I still do the things that I need to do to make sure that as athletes, you guys are getting the things that you need to be successful. So despite the things that are going on in your lives, we have to figure out, or you have to figure out, okay, how can I still navigate life? Because life is still going to go on despite all these other things that are going on at home or, you know, with you and this, that, and the other. So
you're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here speaking with Hill House Academics track and field coach girls, Mr. Gary Moore. You're now teaching kids about, you know, not only about discipline, but how to take care of themselves. Hygiene is an issue now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that you're just not doing track.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you educate yourself to do this? Do you confer with other teachers, other coaches? Is this a epidemic where it's, you know, every inner city track coach is dealing with the same issues, or this is statewide?
I think it's something that's statewide. I think it's nationwide. I just don't know exactly how all the other coaches are dealing with it, with what's going on. But, you know, I think it's just about finding the resources and having people around you that when a kid needs something or something's going on, you know, you know who to refer them to. Because I think sometimes we also have to understand some things are beyond our pay grade. And so you got to be able to know when those things come to you, okay, you want to be of assistance, you want to be helpful. And so I think just interacting with people of different departments in the city and here and there or who has connections to who and who that could provide services for some of these kids and what their needs are, I think it's just very important to have that. And so, you know, we're fortunate that we have relationships with people that if kids need, we can kind of point them in a direction and say, okay, I know somebody, boom, 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 therapy. Hey, I know somebody hey, let me call so-and-so and see if I can connect your mom and you up to her so you guys can, you know, meet and kind of take care of some of these things that are going on that are affecting you and that's affecting your behavior on a day-to-day. because right now I'm at a loss with how to deal with this. And you need a little bit, like I said, this is beyond my pay grade. So I think just having those resources out there to help support those kids, you know, is very, very valuable.
What is an example of a good track athlete?
The good track athlete, you have to be, we always use this term, you have to be coachable. And, being coachable is, we're giving you the tools, we're giving you the ingredients of what it takes to be at a certain level. And how do you receive that information, and what do you do once you get that information? And so it could be a certain skill. How are you able to process and put that into action? So when we talk about even basic things like coming on time, communicating when you can't be here. We don't want to know after the fact. We want to know before. We kind of treat it like a job a little bit, because our job is to prepare you for life, not just for the sport. The kids that can do those things and understand the importance of those things, those tend to be those kids that tend to really excel, or have elements of those things. Yeah, you have these things that you do pretty well, but then this part right here, we're all humans. You got to work on that piece a little bit more. And so for us, it's about looking at those things and saying, okay, let's work on these things. Let's hone in on these things. And so my wife would always say, the kids who listen are the ones that normally end up doing well for themselves. The ones who don't listen, who want to do it their way, or listen to Joe Schmo at Gulf Street Park or whoever, you know, those are the kids who tend to struggle. And so really it's about listening, because we've been doing this for so long, and we've had a lot of kids come through the program and go to college, but not just go to college. I don't think going to college is necessarily the tough thing nowadays. I think it's about, can you stay and can you graduate? Can you get your degree? And our kids are doing that. And that's the thing that really makes this rewarding, that you didn't just get there, but you got there and you're able to make it through. So, you know, those kids who tend to, who listen to what we're asking of them, tend to have a smoother ride and tend to, you know, just really take off.
Let's talk a little bit about your accomplishment this year. State champs, right?
Yeah.
Girls outdoor?
Yeah, and indoor.
And indoor. I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
You're very humble about it, but... What did you see in this year's team that really made it happen?
We had some really good core kids, but then we had kids that were really good complementary kids. I have a philosophy that with certain number of core kids that you know can really get it done on their own, that could be four kids. We have about four of those kids that could really get it on their own, and then we have these complimentary kids who run the relays, who get a point here, get a point there, we have a good opportunity of being pretty successful. And that's been the formula for 30 years. You know, our program has won a state championship every year that we've been there, except for 2008, whether it's the girls' team or the boys' team. So every year, that's our goal as a program, is to be successful with that formula that we have, you know, and always thinking about the younger ones and making sure the younger ones understand that they're important to this team. Yeah, you're just coming out. Yeah, you know, you're not where you want to be and this, that, and the other, but use that as motivation to just get better. And as you get better, we get better as a team. And so I really try to make it a point to express that to those young kids, that you're important. Don't think because, you know, you're not on the varsity, or you ran in the freshman sophomore meet, or you ran in the novice meet and you didn't qualify for states. Your time is going to come, but that comes with work. So focus on you personally. And that's the great thing about track. I think it's the greatest sport in the world. There's something for everybody. And two, it's about you and you and your personal records, that every time you throw that quarter of an inch further or you break that time down by a tenth of a second, you're getting better. And what happens as you get better? The accomplishments start to come. You start to go to those varsity meets. You start to place in those invitational meets. And then next thing you know, you're one of the better kids in the New Haven County area. Before you know it, you're one of the better kids in the state. Before you know it, you're one of the better kids in New England, and it just kind of grows and grows and grows. But getting the kids to understand that they control that. They control, you control, based on your commitment to this thing, what it's going to look like. And that doesn't mean everybody's going to be a scholarship athlete. That doesn't mean that. But people, I believe, just want to be better at whatever they're spending time in. If I'm working out, I want to see that the pounds are coming off. And that seeing the pounds come off, that's motivation. And so it's the same thing in sport. And I think our sport is different because it's measurable. It's black and white. It's not someone else's opinion. It's not my opinion. It's not based off our relationship. It's about what you do, and you can see it in front of you. And so I love that about the sport. And those are things, like I said, that we push with the kids, that you are, everyone on this team is important. Because as those kids leave, you're next. You ready? You ready for the responsibility?
This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. And right now, I am now joined by Coach Gary Moore. Alongside him, his partner, wife, and assistant coach, Michelle Moore. Welcome.
Thank you.
How competitive is it in the household now between the two of you?
When you said men are competitive, I start thinking about my family. My family tells me, I tell them, everything is not a competition. And they tell me, yes, it is. Everything. Getting to the car first. Competition. So everything's a competition.
Now, how is it? How have you seen him grow, and how have you grown throughout these 30 years of coaching? And how did you get involved with the...
Well, I got involved. I came to Hill House quite a few years ago, 94, and I was a substitute on the way to becoming a teacher. And I met this guy. And so in dating him, I also, well, before we were dating, he just invited me to the meets. And I just enjoyed it. And I would go and I would jog with the kids. I would help out. And just before we get started with this, I was not an athlete. I didn't do athletics in high school. But I got involved with these guys, and they just told me what to do, and I helped in any way that I could. So that's how I got tripped up and dragged into track and field. But I love it. I love it. How have we grown? I don't know. I thought he was perfect already as a coach. I've always admired him. When I first met him and we were hanging out, and I was hanging out with the track team, I just thought he communicated very well with the kids, and I saw the respect that they had for him. So, hence, I had respect for him. His growth, I think he's improved with, you know, you fuss about things. Mm-hmm. He really doesn't fuss about things. I don't know if he really did it. I don't know if I could call it fuss. I don't even know what to term it. Mm-hmm. But whatever he used to do, he kind of brought it down a lot. Mm-hmm. He pulled back on some sides of what he did with the kids. The old kids say that he's gotten soft. But I think he's learned how to navigate with the kids that are here now. The kids who were there, they needed what he was doing at that time. The kids who are here now, they can't take really him going 100 on them, because they don't always respond well to that. And so he's adjusted in his way that he, I think, communicates with them. And sometimes he has to go a little hard. But I think he talks more, explains more about why he's doing what he's doing. And I don't know if you did that before a long time ago. No. A whole lot. No, he was just, this is how it is. This is how it's going to be. He still's that way, but he talks a little bit more.
My question now is, has his listening skills improved, and how transferable is that to the relationship between the two of you?
his listening skills are good, and he definitely does a good job with me. He's grown a lot over the years. I think we both have, though. You know, when you get married, the adjustment is on both ends. So I think he listens better, and so do I. We've learned each other over the, because we've been together for a while, and we're talkers. We communicate, and we keep the Lord in the midst of our relationship, so he helps balance what's going on there. But we've committed to each other. We're committed. Nobody's leaving. Nobody's leaving. No. Nobody's leaving. And so if you decided you're not going to leave, that means we got to figure it out. Mm. Whatever the conflict is, we got to figure it out. And so we've learned to do that. And I think we do a better job of it than we used to. What you say? Yes. Yeah, we do. We do. Grown in the athletic side of things. I don't know. How have I grown, Carrie? I really don't know. I think my knowledge has grown. I mean, we go to clinics, so my knowledge has grown. I think I've had to make the same adjustment that he's made, because we're definitely, where you said his parents are disciplinarians, my parents were disciplinarians. We are disciplinarians. And so we had to pull back on maybe sometimes this is how it's going to be. It's going to be that way, but we might pull back on saying, okay, you know, we can't do this anymore. We kind of slow that process down, because the kids today, the ability that they have to make adjustments is not, it's not there, or to make swift adjustments. And so we have to give them more time. Mm. We have to talk a lot more. And so I think I've grown in that area, because that's not easy for a disciplinarian. So I'd say that's an area that I've grown, and my understanding of the sport.
Now, there is now coaching for mental aptitude, that change is possible. And then there's change, you know, there's coaching for the physical.
Okay.
Have you been able to separate them and then bring them back together, the two things?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're tied in. I'd like to believe this might be true for him too, but my reason for getting involved with young people was to help them navigate life. I teach as well. So I was teaching before I got involved with track and field. And that's about life. Struggles, they happen. What you gonna do now? And I just wanted to be a person who was there to kind of help kids navigate that. I teach, but my main mission is the kids and them being ready for life. Mm. And so, yeah. We can separate it. Sometimes we have to step away from the track and let's sit down and talk, you know, about this situation. Let's sit down and talk about why you're doing what you're doing. Let's sit down and talk about, we got to change. You know, we got to adjust what's going on.
We're in our last few minutes here. Coach, what would you like to say to either one? What would you like to say to someone who wants to get involved in track and field and are at that middle school age going into high school, or if they're in high school?
Especially for kids who do other sports in other seasons, track and field has always been that sport that covers everything that you would do in another sport. So I would encourage kids to try the sport, because like I said earlier, there's always something for everybody to do. So, you know, you're 6'2", 280, you can come out and do track. That doesn't mean you necessarily have to run all the time. Mm-hmm. You'd be a thrower. And there's some agility things and some footwork things in there that you would benefit from. Obviously, basketball and those sports where you're running, it's a marriage. But I don't think we're getting a lot of coaches that I think they may understand it, but they're not having those conversations with those kids and saying, hey, this is something that will benefit you. And even with our kids, you know, it's about marketing. If you can do the sport of track and you come out and you end up doing well with it and you're doing, say, football, that could be a nice little situation for you when you start talking about getting a scholarship or getting money to college. So you're not putting your eggs all in one basket. So I you know, that's our thing. We're just getting kids to kind of cross over more, because at the end of the day, as a coach, I can't tell you to not do this or not do that, because at the end of the day, I'm not paying for your tuition when it's time for you to go to college. Neither is any other coach. So you go out there, you keep your options open. You never know what you can possibly open yourself up to. So when I think about the number of kids that have come out for track their senior year, and next thing you know, one particularly comes to mind, next thing you know, you're in the top three in the United States. Before you know it, you're over in Poland running, representing the United States. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah.
But you came out because people kept saying you were fast, and you came out, and next thing you know, you're running professionally. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and so like you said, you know, never limit yourself of the possibilities, especially with our sport, because like I said, it complements everything else. So that would be my thing. Come out, you try the sport, no matter what town you live in, because I'm sure this is just not a New Haven thing. You know, there's people from all over different towns who listen to this. You know, I think there's a lot that they can get out of being a part of it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to both of you. You have been listening to the Electric Drum here on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. We just had a delightful conversation with Hillhouse Academics coach, Mr. Gary Moore, and his lovely wife, Michelle Moore. Thank you very much for the both of you for coming out.
Thank you
for having us.
And like always, I thank you for your listen.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.